Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, is your relationship suffering because you're watching too much TV? No, of course it isn't. Watching TV with your partner is brilliant. But what if one of you doesn't love TV as much as the other? The weirdo. That's the quandary faced by the Nables and addressed by the Servants of Darkness as they go to hell and back in 1992's Stay Tuned.
Sorry to disturb you at this hour, but I have something you want.
A new TV?
It broadcast programs no one had ever seen.
Wednesday at 9, don't miss an all-new episode of The Silencer of the Lambs.
Then one night, Roy and Helen Nable got sucked in and discovered that hell is one TV show after another.
Let's welcome our new contestants, Roy and Helen
While in the blue corner, yay, it's another Jim Carrey movie, screamed kids in the mid-90s. More wacky, silly, slapstick antics. What a shock we all got when it turned out this was not your average Jim Carrey movie, as his Chip Douglas, and indeed the whole film, is a much darker outing for the rubber-faced Prince of Comedy from 1996. It's The Cable Guy.
Cable Guy!
Let's do this.
Slip the cable guy $50. He'll give you all the movie channels for free.
You're offering me a bribe. What you have just done is illegal. And in this state, if convicted, you could be fined up to $5,000 or spend 6 months in a correctional facility.
Oh, please. No, that was dumb. I was just making conversation.
I'll juice you up.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Okay, Clash Putters, everything goes. Maim, murder each other, I don't care, but keep it clean. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both? I'll ask you first, V, because your answers tend to be longer, and I'm trying to take off this jingly bracelet that I'm wearing, which I always normally take off before the show. It's got skulls on it. It's very cool, but it makes a lot of noise.
It's very cool. You're not supposed to say that yourself.
Okay.
Oh, look, your cool bracelet.
There you go. Thanks very much. You well?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, bit hot. Yeah. Fine.
You look very summery today.
Thanks.
No, would that be a... I know we've been talking a lot about your pastel wardrobe recently. Would these trousers
Does this count as a pastel? Basically, for all our younger listeners, dad pants are back. So otherwise known as Annie Hall pants. I was like, I'm going to get my Annie Hall pants out today.
Great.
Here they are.
Great. And you got your sandals out?
I know. Are you all right with that?
I'm
Chris,
fine.
Are you wearing flip-flops? You didn't
Nah, not today.
What the fuck's happening?
Annie's put trousers back on.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be out till late and it might get cold later. Speaking of which, I have booked a table for the pub. So can we...
Crack on.
Great. Sorry, yeah. Sorry, just in case this episode seems at all rushed today, the Euros are on. You're probably aware. Chris certainly is. So, yeah, let's just crack on. No small talk this week, right?
Big game.
Let's go.
All right, then. So, Stay Tuned versus The Cable Guy. These were my choices this week. Why? Just because. But also, Stay Tuned was one of those movies I feel like I watched 1,000 times as a kid, but I haven't rewatched it for about 25 years, and so therefore was desperate to rewatch it. It hasn't been available in the UK since we began the pod nearly 2 years ago. It's finally on Amazon in glorious standard definition. And The Cable Guy is a film that I've been meaning to rewatch for years. I only saw it once as a kid, and as I said in the intro, it didn't hit the spot I was expecting. But now, the idea of watching a darker Jim Carrey mainstream comedy seemed rather appealing, and that is why we are here. So, the clue I gave was too much TV, it's bad for your health. Chris followed that up on Twitter with...
I was a bit hungover, if I'm honest. I mean, it was a picture of some static television.
Yep. Just a quick reminder, football's on. So
England had played the night before.
Chris is half-arsing it at the moment. Let's be honest. Right, we flicked through the various guesses that were broadcast to the world at ClashPod on Twitter. We are at ClashPod on Instagram as well. We haven't done a horror pairing for a while, and I know you like this, Chris. I love this. Josie Bob, Katie, Designs on Your Soul, Paul Logue, Tim Wilkins, Joshua Eaton, Ian Hughes all went... The Ring versus Poltergeist.
It's a great, a really good idea.
Hadn't occurred to me that pairing. No. It's solid, isn't it?
It's absolutely brilliant. We're definitely doing that in the near future. Gary said, The Truman Show versus Videodrome. It's a sentence I love, but I haven't seen Videodrome for so long. I don't know if it does work, but it's sort of appealing in its perversity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we'll definitely get to The Truman Show, won't we?
Mm. Welsh and Elsewhere, aka Gavin, says, I can't imagine it would be these two, but is the next clash Videodrome versus Stay Tuned? Wow. No, it's not, but God, there's something beautiful about that too. And Tom Mimnar said, Stay Tuned versus Last Action Hero, which would have really worked, but it's not that. So the correct guess this week goes to no one. You get nothing!
In spite of the fact that you even put up a third clue.
I did put up a third clue.
Which was a good clue because it's one of my connections for the films.
Yeah. Massive satellite dish.
Yeah.
In both movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but still no one got it. That is a first for Clash. But as we've never had one, Bert. Do you think we have?
I think we have, just not for a while, yeah.
Right. I don't remember the last time people didn't get it, dear Clash Podders. Anyway, it is Stay Tuned versus The Cable Guy. So, you know, try harder next time. Connection section. What do you got?
Giant satellite dishes.
Giant satellite dishes. Yeah. That's it, honestly.
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, good one.
Silence of the Lambs jokes in both films, and there's quite a few Silence of the Lambs actors in Cable Guy.
You'd be much happier if you stop watching TV. It seems to be the sentiment entirely in Stay Tuned and in a very confused way for about 10 seconds in The Cable Guy.
Mm-hmm.
They make a lot of references, so there's a crossover in some of the references they make. They're both, you get Cosby Show.
Star Trek, there's a crossover. There you go. Two Star Trek,
two Cosby shows.
Facts of Life.
Yep.
That's a joke in both. On that basis, dated pop culture references.
Yes.
In both films. Spec scripts written by people as their first screenplay. Jim Genuine and Tom Parker were advertising copywriters. Lou Holtz Jr., who wrote The Cable Guy, was a prosecutor. And both scripts, weirdly, sold for $750,000.
Wow.
Apparently.
Bloody hell.
And that's in early 1990s money. That's a lot of dosh.
Yeah. Born in the wrong era we were. Cable being sold to people on the basis that you get to watch sexy stuff. Jack Black says that if you slip him some money, he'll give you all the movie channels, even the dirty ones. And Jeffrey Jones tells John Ritter he'll get hot oil aerobics. The idea that cable brings you some sexy stuff. Certainly did when I was a teenager. Oof, bravo. Beverly Hills Bordello, The Red Shoe Diaries. Great days. They weren't. I guess the final connection that I'm actually using is pretty much my clue. Too much TV is bad for your health. Both our protagonists get loads of TV from their cable guys and pay the price. Shall we get into this?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. All right. So on Thursday, Chris will be dealing with one of his hates, people illegally watching movies. God, he hates that. But today, we're more devil may care about things as Victoria channel surfs through Stay Tuned. V takes on a journey.
Before the internet, people absolutely loved television. Rather than spending their precious leisure time binging red eyeshadow tutorials or Googling, do diet lollipops give you the shits? There was nothing more relaxing than channel surfing the hours away. Just ask Roy Nable, fencing champ turned couch potato, who, when he's not undermining his wife and ignoring his kids, is fixed to the idiot lantern, so much so that when the devil's henchman offers him a free TV and 666 channels, he happily signs away his soul, then has to spend the next 24 hours saving himself and his marriage in twisted versions of much-loved TV shows that are now out to kill him. And so Roy remembers who he used to be and transforms from sad sack to hero, saving Helen and besting the devil and learning there's more to life than the Gogglebox. There's also fencing. Yeah, fencing, because fencing is the opposite of television. Deal with it. It's a great film, the end.
It is a great film.
Do diet lollipops give you the shits?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't eat them because I believe they do give you the shits. So. Okay.
That's probably how they work, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't say why you'll be lighter. It just says you'll be lighter.
You can't do the time, don't do the crime.
I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm very excited to talk about this film. So first of all, I need to say, I've seen this a million times, right? So this was a video rental when I was really young, and I have really clear memories of where I was at my friend Kelly's house, and we watched it a million times. However, as I texted you, I was like, this is the greatest film in the world. Me, aged eight. I wasn't eight because it didn't come out until 92/93. So I was 11 or 12, which is really bad because it means I was really juvenile and immature because I thought it was absolutely hilarious. I didn't get, at the time, I didn't get hardly any of the references.
Yeah. I still didn't get some of them. Mm. I mean, they're quite old
sitcoms. Well, some of them never played in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I absolutely loved this film. And yeah, so... So
who saw it the most then? Because Alex said earlier that he'd seen this a million times when he was a kid.
Yeah. I think I've easily seen it sort of over five times.
I'm closing in on 10.
Yeah.
No doubt. Because I actually, weirdly, I couldn't remember why this film was so omnipresent in my teenage years. But, you know, I'm a bit older than you. So I must have been about, I don't know, like 13, 14. And addicted to this movie. And I texted my little brother. I was like, why was this a big film? Did we record it off the TV? He was like, no, we just used to rent it from the video shop over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I loved it. And I understood watching it again this time why, as a teenager, I adored it, because it is so fast paced and it has all these elements that I loved as a kid. It's like part fantasy, supernatural, horror, hell, TV, pop culture. And it goes like the clappers. It's an hour and a half and you're done.
Mm.
Brilliant. And so, yeah, big, big part of my childhood. Chris?
So I reckon by the time it came out on video, I would have been 15 and you would have been 14.
Yeah. All right. That sounds about right.
I watched it once.
Okay.
And?
I didn't watch it again.
Right. But do you have any memories of that? This is sort of the histories with the movie section. It's not just a stat. It's sort of more about an emotion.
I mean, I didn't think it was all that.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, there were a lot of films that were like this in the 80s and 90s.
There's no film like this.
These anthologies, like Kentucky Fried Movie was one, Amazon Women on the Moon, UHF, the Weird Al Yankovic film, that were like a sketch show with a loose framework that is an excuse just to put a bunch of sketches together. And I think this was my least favourite of all of them, and I don't like many of those ones either.
Wow. Okay, different. Yeah. Different opinions in the studio.
But I do like friends. I do like the setup. I do like the premise.
The devil selling you cable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Wish the devil had been it. Anyway.
Anyway, let's talk. So I did my research, but there isn't lots to say.
Well. I literally will talk about it.
Oh, okay. Mine's opposite to anyway. There isn't much to say, I don't think, about the background, which I did do quite a bit of research, but that sort of pleased me because it kind of chimes with my relationship with this film. So the fact that there's not much out there didn't surprise me because I loved it when I was 11, 12 or 8 or whatever I was. But then I completely forgot about it the whole life, and no one has ever mentioned it to me since in the intervening, 30 years until you. We talked about this film. I couldn't even believe you'd seen it. And then you were like, oh, stage. I was like, oh, I fucking love that film. I can't believe you've seen
Chris's
it.
That's Chris's theory why no one guessed it on Twitter. He doesn't think people are aware of stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't screen regularly on TV. It's not easy to find on streaming.
It featured on, I think, was it Screen Rant? It was a website that did the lost films of the early 90s, and this obviously featured on that list, and featured on a lot of lists like that, the underappreciated films of the early 90s.
And it doesn't feature movie stars either.
Yeah. But that's I just didn't realise until you, Alex, mentioned it like 2 years ago. I was like, we've never even had a conversation. When we knew each other before this, we never talked about this film. But we were both like, oh my God, I love that film.
Do you know, this started getting a mention online last year when WandaVision came out.
Right.
Because WandaVision followed a similar kind of premise.
Mm.
They just did it in a different way.
Mm.
Well, the one exciting thing about it is it's the director. It's his hat-trick movie on Clash of the Titles.
Yes.
Peter Hyams, our friend Peter Hyams from the End of Days episode.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And, of course, the fantastic The Relic.
Don't forget The Relic.
The Relic. That was a great episode.
And looking through his back catalogue, there are a couple more. He could hit five at least.
Oh, my God.
I think we're going to do Time Cop.
Time Cop. And I really want to do a Sound of Thunder because I'm a masochist.
Right.
I think that'd be good. But in terms of the director, you've got the original director.
Yeah. So as Alex has mentioned, it was a spec script by Jim Genuine and Tom S. Parker, their first script, although they then went on to write Richie Rich, which I've seen and loved, and Flintstones, brilliant.
Yeah, I think they were, but they were one of 35 writers on the Flintstones.
Also, two films that we could potentially do, Richie Rich and Flintstones.
I went to the cinema to see Richie Rich. I was so excited about it. I fucking loved it.
I always thought, because it was always there in my childhood, but it was a massive flop. It was.
I couldn't believe that.
Well, it's because they spent all the money paying Macaulay Culkin. They could never make the money back.
Yeah. So, Morgan Creek, who made it, they're funded by Warner Brothers. And so they wanted Tim Burton to direct it. Tim Burton declined because he wanted to do Batman Returns instead.
Idiot.
I mean, is there a way to do both? I don't know. But Peter Hyams, he apparently just campaigned really hard. He'd read the spec. He loved it. He really wanted it. I think it's fair to say he may not have been a natural choice at the time, although there is quite a lot of action set pieces in it, so maybe. But it is. I think it's a bit of a jump from Tim Burton to Peter Hyams at the time. But whatever, what do I know? So
he'd done it, he'd got an interesting CV at this point. Other movies that we could do, probably not the first one, but he'd done the sequel to 2001 A Space Odyssey, 2010, which as a kid I remember enjoying a lot more because it's more of an action movie.
Something Happens.
Yeah. I really enjoyed 2010.
Better if you're a kid, yeah.
And is it Roy Scheider in it as well? Roy Scheider?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I like 2010. He'd done Capricorn 1, which is great, and another movie that we are definitely doing, Outland. He'd done that, the Western in Space with Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And then what's the matter?
He doesn't want to do Outland.
He's excited about Outland and I'm not.
So it was going to be Dan Aykroyd in the lead. He turned it down. Richard Dreyfuss was also attached, but then we end up with John Ritter, quite rightly. Tracy Ullman was attached to be Helen. We end up with Pam Dorber from More Committed. This is another reason why it makes sense why I loved it, because I loved More Committed.
Sure.
When I was
as a kid in England at that time, you knew Pam Dorber. You didn't really know John Ritter.
No.
His big sitcom, I don't think screened over here. If it did, it didn't when we were kids.
Three's Company, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no. I've never seen it.
But
and I didn't get the joke, the parody this at all.
No.
But every kid loved More Committed. And I think it's quite clever casting, because these are two actors who I think were trying to escape their TV past by moving into movies, playing two characters who are trying to escape from TV.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's true. I'm surprised there is no more Mindy. I don't know whether it's a rights thing, but it's weird that he gets a parody of Three's Company, but there's no more Mindy.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is all I've got. I mean, and I did look quite hard. That's kind of it.
That's fine.
So we'll talk about the film, and let's talk about why I love this film so much, because the opening scene is Ghostbusters. So I've been on such a journey with this, watching it in the week, and I had a bit to drink, as I confessed, but everything just fell into place for me as to why I loved it, because I didn't examine why I loved it when I was 11. I was like, this is a great film. That's the end of that conversation.
I think just for diehard fans of your drinking, remind us what the drink is of choice at the moment. It's a Jet Pilot.
It's called a Jet Pilot.
What goes into that?
It's three types of rum, one of which is overproof, lime juice, and then a blend of herbs and spices, one of which is a little tiny bit of absinthe, just to really kick things off. Viburnum, which is like a spice. I think it's a liqueur. I think it's got sugar in it. It's got like cardamom and whatever else. The cinnamon syrup in it, and a fuckload of crushed ice, and it is delicious.
It sounds good. What's overproof means it's illegally strong.
It's very strong. Not like, illegally. You can buy it.
What's overproof? So that's
over 50%.
Okay.
So I think this one.
So if it's over 50%, then you'll definitely need to add absinthe to it to give it a kick.
I'll dilute it with absinthe. Watering down.
Yeah, it was an exciting day in my house when the absinthe arrived. I was like, what the fuck is this?
That's the worst.
Do you not remember when I drank absinthe when we were at college?
Was it you? Yeah. Oh my God, so Mark was like, we've never drunk this together. I was like, we have, because I've had it. So who have I drunk absinthe with?
I brought it back. I drank it in town, and I drank quite a lot in town. And then I was walking back to the tube to come back to college, and this was an evening, a Friday night, and these German tourists came up to me and was like, do you know where this pop scene club is? And I'm like, pop scene? Yeah, it's this way. And I was going to direct them, and then I went, I'll just show you. Oh, and then I walked into pop scene with them, and then I think they ran off because they were like, we're here now, goodbye. And I sort of walked around pop scene expecting to see people I knew, even though I wasn't with anyone. And I did a circuit, and then I got back on the tube and came back to college and gave you the absinthe.
Some absinthe.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's good. So now I can square that circle, because I did not know. And I gave it, like, I was like, I don't know who I drank it with. I've definitely had it. Gave it a sniff and all these, like, I was like, it was a long time ago. That's the memory that's coming through. But I didn't know it was you. Oh, that's fun. So yeah, opening scene, Ghostbusters. Not much to say about that, but it sets up the idea that the devil is out and about sort of recruiting people. But importantly, let's go and meet the Nabel family. So John Ritter as Roy Nabel. So from a script perspective, he was a fencing champ and he's watching the telly and he gets the sword down from the wall. That kind of makes no sense. Like, fencing is not the opposite of television, which is the sort of thing you want to do there. Like, you used to be this and now you're this. And before you know the ending or the explanation that he was a fencer, is that right? He's just randomly fencing the telly.
I know, but also it's a setup and payoff, right?
It's perfect. Yeah,
I mean, in that respect, I mean, I will say this script does a very good job. It doesn't waste a lot of nonsense and guff at the start in terms of just like this and that. Everything is setting up stuff that pays off later.
Well, because it's all done via narration by a kid.
Oh, that's
talking,
true.
Who's
that's
the
true.
Kid talking to?
Yeah.
Why is this kid talking to me?
Such a good point, and I can't give it a pass because who are you talking to? And also, you don't need it.
That's the point. Yeah. That's the point. You watch the images that are happening on screen and they're really quite, I actually think the narration spoils it, because him dragging the plumbing supplies up the stairs and his depression and his midlife crisis is all really bleakly illustrated in the images, and then unfortunately undone by this child talking about it.
You need to understand why this man is depressed, because he's married to a successful woman.
Yeah.
And that's impossible. That poor man.
But
it is
defense,
a bit like
my
house, yeah.
I
recognise that dynamic.
But he's not actually. He makes it very clear that he's not threatened by her. She thinks he is.
He says he's not.
Mm.
Well, who wouldn't be?
Oh, it is like your house. Yeah.
He wouldn't be, because not only is she an advertising executive, but she's one for a vitamin company, which is so weirdly specific.
Yeah.
And not that exciting. Like. Yeah.
But I suppose, again, script-wise, like, what can she do that's wholesome, that's the opposite of slobbing around watching telly? Vitamins, yes. I suppose. It's the 90s.
Although I say setup and payoff, that never comes back in.
It doesn't. Yeah. She does get a bit robbed of her moment later on. So their marriage is in trouble because he loves TV so much. And then this upset me a bit on this watch. The kids, they've got these two kids. They're lovely. They make themselves scarce for the night. So basically, so their parents can have sex. I mean, that is what's happening. And I found that very upsetting, that the kids are like, goodbye.
Do you think so?
A little bit, yeah.
I know. I think they just were like, you know, we want to give you some time together.
But he says about, oh, and the neighbours, they went off and they stayed in a hot tub all weekend and then they were fine. And it's like, well, what were they doing in the hot tub? You know, so...
Does he know how old is he?
No, I don't think he understands.
Yeah, he's a little naive kid. He's a little 90s family movie kid who's like, just spend some time together.
Yeah. But I did get this when I was 11 and I got it again now. Their marriage, their relationship between Roy and Helen just feels believable and relatable, and you just root for them so much already, I feel. And obviously, it's very difficult to disentangle my emotion from watching it this time around, but I just feel like that. Like, you just feel like they're good people and you want them to be all right.
I don't really buy it with him.
Really?
Do you think he's a bit of a disappointment?
It's a bit over the top watching. So he doesn't talk to his kids or his wife. All he does is watch TV 24/7.
But both of these films, I do the pre-internet thing. I know I was making a joke, but these films wouldn't happen now, because what we do when we're addicted to something and we ignore people is we're just scrolling. Telly's fantastic, but I don't think it quite commands our attention the way it used to.
Oh, I disagree. I mean, okay. I really, when he is watching, I think it's the basketball game, and he's giving sort of one word answers, and then he's trying to explain that he really wants to watch the TV because he's invested in it, and she's like, I can't believe you're not listening to me. I have that conversation with Nettie all the time because she likes to talk when we're watching TV, and I can't do both. Yeah, I have to, because I don't want to do both because I'm invested in the show.
What are you watching?
Anything. No, but like good things. But I think we're in this golden era of TV. We're in this golden age of TV. And I'm really drawn into TV.
Country Files on, like, babe,
I love Coast.
I don't understand that. And in unrelated news, please don't talk to me during the football tonight. Not a word.
Yeah, I mean, I do that. It's, yeah. I'm not going to, well, I do that annoying thing, which I pretend that I'm doing because it's the way it should happen, but I'm really doing to make a point where Nettie goes, so listen, and I'm like, pause, yes, and the TV has to be on pause while we're having the conversation, then I'll unpause it, which makes an hour-long TV drama last about 4 hours.
I think Nettie needs to watch TV with Georgina and I need to watch it with you, and then everyone will be fine.
More on that after a short break.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee, start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Here's Geoffrey Jones as Spike, offering, after Helen has smashed at the telly by brilliantly, script-wise, throwing the fencing trophy at the telly, offering Roy a new telly and 666 channels. Helen's scream when she comes home and sees the telly, I just thought was amazing. Like, I thought it was so funny, like her horrified scream. And the TV is showing things like Three Men and Rosemary's Baby and sadistic home videos. And this, to me, is a perfect tease of what is to come in this film. And we'll talk about why this film, I think why me and you, Alex, like it so much, because this TV can show you anything within parameters. So you feel safe within those parameters, but it can do anything, which is really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, this feels so like just a really well-written parody stuff. Like the idea of going, we thought it would be funny if our Bob, dressed as a policeman, would tell a perfect stranger that her husband was dead. It's like funny, well done. And the bit where he's like, look across the street. Yeah. And you're like, it's just great.
Yeah, and the fact that she's in on it. So she does her hair and she's like, is that a camera? She's like, oh my God, you guys, yeah. That's so good.
Yeah, but like even Three Men and Rosemary's Baby, like I got those references at 14. And to me, I think this was one of the first times I'd sort of seen cinema eat itself, something be so meta. So this felt like a really, really edgy
on
movie.
A level that you could understand as well. Like, it's not really, it is first for grown-ups, but Three Men and Rosemary's Baby, you get that because it's like a bit puerile, but fine. So like when Helen and Roy get sucked into the huge dish in their garden and they're going to be in Hellavision, straight into a game show called
I wish it was called Hellavision.
It is called Hellvision.
It's just called Hellvision.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, which is now disappointing.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Hellvision is great.
Yeah.
Oh, idiots.
We find out they're doing it, though, that this is all happening to entertain Satan.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is really similar to the plot of Cabin in the Woods.
Yes, and so is the control room.
Yeah.
They ripped it off.
They did. Mm. And I felt like the Geoffrey Jones arrival and the deal he makes is so similar to The Box with Frank Langella's character arriving at the door and offering.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree.
If only the rest of The Box was as good as the start of The Box.
I'm with you on that.
So this is why I like this film. So when they're in the game show, obviously that's just a setup that anything can happen and they're going to get, they can be killed. But it's like, to me, this is why the film is good. It's like a lucid dream because anything can happen. Where will they go next? But within the parameters of it will be a TV show. Mm. So as a viewer, you're like, oh, they could go anywhere and do anything. It's just so thrilling.
But it does work best. And we can talk about this as we come to them. It works best when, and I think sometimes they deviate a bit too much. It's like there is such a well of TV tropes to pick from. I think sometimes their choices are a little bit strange and it feels like
because they don't bother. Some of them, it's just, what is that? That's not a TV show.
It's not a TV show. It is. I think they're all TV shows. It's just that they're not as well known as they should be for a show that really has such a well of pop culture to dip into.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, like, that, for example, like the French Revolution.
Yes.
It's like, I mean, you, why there? Why that? What is it, a historical drama? It's sort of like, it's not something that you're like, oh, I want to see that.
That's true.
Put in a couple of songs and it's a piss take of Les Mis. Mm. Something like that. It's I just feel like so many of them, I'm like, what are you getting at here?
Yeah, I do think that in the game show element, though, tell me if I'm wrong, but the Napa Crapper 2000 is actually a fantastic idea.
It's not bad, is it?
I mean, as long as you live alone, you know,
yeah,
and you don't have people
and
over.
And it's plumbed in.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Plumbed in, yeah.
I hope. I mean,
I'm imagining it plumbed in. I'm not saying I just want to shit in a bowl underneath a chair.
In a commode.
Right?
I mean, that's in your future, so.
Yeah, no, a long way in the future.
Maybe.
Well, not the way I'm going.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the control room, very Cabin in the Woods. We meet Eugene Levy as Crowley, so that's Spike's sort of second in command. And we established that all this programming is for the boss, not Bruce Springsteen. That's still funny, I think. And then we've got this other character, which I completely forgot about. Is he called Pierce, who's the sort of trying
intern
to oust? Yeah, yeah, and he's trying to oust the Geoffrey Jones.
Pointless intern subplot is what I've written down.
Yes.
Although, yeah, I guess, yeah.
It doesn't, yeah. But the joke he makes about there being a lack of subtext, that's a very funny meta joke. And I would not have got that in 1992. And this time I was laughing my head off. Brilliant. So anyway, we've set up the rules. If they survive 24 hours, Helen and Roy, they get to go home.
We literally have a literal ticking clock throughout.
Perfect.
It's great.
Yep. But as Spike says, everybody stays. So, you know, the odds are against them. So that means we're off. So we can go anywhere. We go wrestling, which was fine. We go to Alaska. But the bit that obviously we're all excited about is the cartoon. Yay! So this is a 6-minute sequence. Roy and Helen are transformed into cartoon mice, pursued by a robot cat, co-directed by Chuck Jones of Looney Tunes with Jeff DeGrandis, who was the film's animation supervisor. It took, 22 weeks to animate.
This was the first thing they started before anything else in the movie. I think this is one of the last things the legend that is Chuck Jones actually did.
Yeah. It was like 80 something when he did it.
It's brilliant though. It's absolutely brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And it's what I loved most when I was 11. And I still absolutely loved it. So Chuck, this is why, this makes sense. So Chuck Jones said, here are people who have been humans and now have become mice. That's a lot different from being Bugs Bunny, who has no past history of being a human being. Mm. But that's, I mean, it's very basic, but that is why it works. Because I love Looney Tunes. I love Tom and Jerry. I love all like Saturday morning cartoons I was hugely into. So having the dynamic of the characters understanding like human jeopardy and having like bickering and a domestic and little relationship dramas, just loved it.
They make a pussy joke here.
Yeah.
And it comes straight after we had the Meet the Mansons.
Yes.
And I guess what has to be scratched in my head is this is a kid's film, but it's filled with jokes that are very much aimed at adults. And it doesn't... where, you know, we all agree that Pixar work on both levels, here I found it quite off.
It's a family film, I'd say, not a kid's film. And also, I mean, as a kid in the 90s, you wanted to watch movies that you didn't fully understand. That was the exciting thing, wondering about what that meant. And I think the minute if you're a child and you're being played to... You feel patronized slightly. You want to be watching films that you don't get. And like, you know, I remember like the Manson gag and going, no idea what that is.
No idea.
But that's interesting. I wonder what it is. It's like a mystery.
And now you know what it is. It's just not funny.
It's a bit upsetting now. Yeah.
I love a pun.
I love a pun. But like the 30-something to life bit of it, that is just a pun. I think you need to have a joke connected to the pun,
mm-hmm.
rather than just, oh, we've come up with a pun and let's put that on screen.
The only one that I was a little bit was Different Strokes.
Ooh, yeah.
It was like, I can't feel my arm.
It's really dark.
I can't see anymore. Different Strokes.
Very dark.
That's really dark.
Yeah.
See, you liked that one, didn't you? You liked that one.
I'm embarrassed I'm laughing, but that's making me laugh.
There is a moment in the cartoon where Helen says to Roy that she's going to leave him, and he says, where are you going to go? Your cartoon mother's house. That's very funny.
Yeah, it's great, though. I mean, the only annoying thing about the cartoon is where Roy, as a mouse, goes, you know, I watch a lot of cartoons.
Yeah.
I mean, how do I get out of this? Show him watching a cartoon at the start instead of like everything else. It's like, that's the one thing you don't see.
If you showed him sitting
on his sofa, like loving a cartoon, then you get that.
But it is thrilling when he connects the dots and he's like, I'm in a cartoon. I therefore can do what I like. Yeah. That's very satisfying.
Yeah.
And then with That's All Folks comes up, it's like when you're 11, you're just like, you're cheering. Like, it's just so, so, so satisfying.
It gives me Who Framed Roger Rabbit vibes, this whole bit. There's something about it.
Oh, yeah, that was a good film.
Mm.
straight after it goes into My Three Sons of Bitches. Do you know what one of the sons was called in that?
No.
Chip Douglas.
Really?
That's where that comes from.
Oh. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
How about famous Maxell cassette advert, Max Hell.
Yeah.
I remember that advert as a kid.
I do too.
It was great.
Yeah.
See, nostalgia. It's a wonderful thing.
The only bit that upset me, and bearing in mind I was quite drunk, so I wasn't feeling like particularly like prurient, is when the cartoon mice are in the cartoon house and they've got like a moment alone from this cat trying to kill them. And Roy says to Helen, for a mouse, you're quite sexy. And then, you know, you say every week, it's not the fucking time.
Yes. I think I wrote it down. I write it down every time.
What's the plan there? No. Anyway, so now we're off to Dwayne's Underworld, which was going to star real life Wayne's World stars Mike Myers.
I mean,
and
was
Carvey.
It?
I don't know.
I can't believe they would read this script and go, "Yeah, we want to be a part of that. We don't use our characters." Oh, hold on, we're doing a parody.
Yes.
You can't parody a parody. That's what I don't understand about that one.
It did work on me when I was 11. I was like, "Yeah, cool."
No, it didn't. It doesn't. You went, "Oh, I recognise that."
Yes,
there was nothing funny about it.
There's a very dark joke in there as well about when they're looking through the. They're like porn mag, and they're like, oh, Helen's in here. I can't remember what they said. Helen's in here, whatever. And they're like, oh, your daughter's pom poms. It's like, fuck me, she's like 15 or
something.
Yeah, that's not good.
I think fake Garth then points to his nipples, so it's nothing's left of the imagination in that moment. I do think I worship Saturn.
It's funny.
It is funny.
It just gives me vibes of, you know, those spoofs they do now, like the Hangover games, where it's like a spoof of the Hangover, but the Hangover was almost a spoof in itself. And I think spoofing a spoof is not... I just don't think there's any humour in it.
Yeah, because you end up making like epic movie and disaster movie and superhero movie. The worst of those was the, I think it's like romantic movie, whatever it was called. Mm. It was basically you were taking very funny comedies and then parodying them. And you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And it's half parody, but it's main just, oh, remember this bit.
It's South Park's member berries.
Exactly.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but you move on quickly enough to one of the best parts of the film, apart from the cartoon, which is the noir spoof. So Roy Nable, Private Dick. And this, just, it is funny. Like when he can't get his gun and his secretary's like, you've dropped your gun again, Mr. Nable. I mean, I was hooting away.
He's a really good comedic actor as well, John Ritter.
Yeah.
I think because he's spent most of his life on TV, jumping from show to show, I think it means that he can just do all this physical comedy, all the, you know, I just think he's good at lots of different jobs, which works for this script.
And also, you know, I'm a big fan of a makeover scene. And now we're into the section where your characters, you see them made over a couple of times, like quite drastically. And that's always, that ticks a lot of boxes for me.
I do think it's that thing, you know, I hate the term, the X factor, but it's something that no amount of like comedic training, clown school and, you know, all the rest of it can give an actor. And it's that likeability, and he is just such a likable presence on screen.
Yeah, it is amazing. And also being a bit more sort of high-minded about the script, the noir spoof section, so we pick up the magic talisman from the neighbour, we pick up the remote control, but think about the restraint that the script shows in not giving John Ritter or Roy Nable a sort of very classic hero moment, because in a minute we'll go to the French Revolution when he's dressed up in drag and he's like a lady with his boobs and whatever. That's the moment when him and Helen make up and it's quite serious and he's like, I'm going to fix this and all the rest of it. You would think that you could put that moment in the black and white thing and give your leading man a true, he looks like a leading man, he's dressed like it, he's Humphrey Bogart, he's going to talk to his wife in that way. But he does it with a wig and lipstick and boobs on and it's still just as good. But I think that's incredible. Like, you've got that scene, where do we put it? And it's like, no, we'll put it, we'll give him the chance to be, he looks very funny and it's still a really emotional moment. I think that's amazing. Being serious for a second.
The noir bit's great. I like I like Murray, isn't Murray Seidenbaum's journey from sort of snivelling husband to the big gangster boss as well. I remember when he turned back up in it, I was like, oh my God. But it's not clear if he's a bit of a dick or not. Like, he's sort of kidnapped.
He's pretty happy his wife's dead.
And
I
then
think that makes you a bad guy.
He's sort of brought Pam Dorber's character to his table.
Yeah.
Just a little bit sleazy. But then he's like, take the remote, you can save yourselves. Yeah. I'm already gone.
Awesome. Then we're in the French Revolution. I mean, I do see your point now that it's a bit sort of like, why? Because I did think it was going to be Les Mis, but it isn't.
I imagine it's just what they had access to in terms of set and costumes.
Okay.
I really feel like I don't think a huge amount of thought has gone into some of them.
And Crowley pops up again here, which to me was just the right time. Like, you'd kind of forgotten about him. He's in it just the right amount, maybe not enough, possibly, because he's very funny. But back home,
have we talked about the exorcist?
Oh no,
that's a good joke.
It's good.
That's a great joke. Just say they're done really well, because it's like, that's a joke where
that's a pun connected to a joke, so that's better.
Yeah, when feel the burn, and then Doreen bursts into flames. It's like, great going, Doreen. And the head spin.
There's two jokes.
Remember the head spin.
But because it's the 90s, one of your children has to be a whiz at technology in some homemade kind of shonky way.
It really reminded me of two films that we'd done, and that's Jumanji and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, I Shrunk the Kids, definitely.
Yeah, whether it's the kids and the adults or the adults and the kids in danger, one or the other. But I felt like it was very similar in the way it plays out. I just thought it was done better in those two. Mm.
It's good, though, that the sister doesn't... Like, I think what could have been really frustrating is, like, you know, I think this is something you hate, where the audience knows something and a character still doesn't know something and refuses to acknowledge the obvious thing. Mm. And the kid, the little brother, is constantly going, look, it's mum and dad on the TV. Look, it's mum. And she's like, no, no, no. And I think they play that just to the point where it was going to get annoying.
Yeah.
And her realisation that actually this is real, it happens at the perfect moment.
Yeah, and also the writing is appropriate. The scene where the girls that she's hanging out with, they're practicing their cheerleading. This is like a minor thing, but the brother needs to get them away from the dish. You can brainstorm a million jokes that could be like quite flat or not appropriate or not age appropriate or whatever, and to spray them with water so that they then chase after him is just sweet and it makes sense and it's like, yeah, it's cute, it's fun, it works. Like, I'm there.
I just love how much is going on, like how many different places we visit. Do you watch Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
This, like, to me is a forerunner for the best Rick and Morty episodes, which are still the two interdimensional cable episodes where they just sit and narrate crazy channels, and it feels like that.
So Daryl's kind of figured it out, and he saves the day. So he saves Roy, but we need an act three. So there's a little bit of random rules here, which I think they just about get away with, which means Roy is fine. But because Helen was kind of trespassing in Hellvision, all bets are off. So she's...
I thought that was the worst bit of writing in it. This sort of adding these rules in at the last minute that don't really make much sense to discharge Roy so that Roy can go back in and be the hero. But it's just very wishy-washy.
Coming back out, it ruins the escape at the end. Having Roy come back out and go back in for a second time is a real shame. And also, just to be really super pedantic, and I never noticed this as a kid, but I did notice it this time around. So Roy signed the contract, and so it's all about him, and, you know, he succeeds so he can leave. But with Murray Seidenbaum and his wife, he signs the contract, clearly, because Jeffrey Jones is the one who comes to his door, and then his wife dies, and that wipes the Seidenbaum score off the big chart on the wall, where it should be his death that does that. She should be inconsequential because she is the Pam Dorber in their relationship.
Yeah.
It feels like spinning it out an extra 10 minutes just to hit the runtime they want to hit, rather than because the story's them in the TV, so let's just get through this. We're so near the end.
Yeah, just to like advocate for the other side, which I can't believe I'm doing, but I think maybe you take him out of the dish so that his kids can see him in the real world being a hero, because they think their dad's a bit useless. And so he's like, I'm going to go back in and I'm going to save mom. And it's that family moment. They're like, be careful or whatever. And so maybe that's why it's there.
It's just as soon as someone says, oh, you're only supposed to take one. What?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, this is both sort of like one of my favourite sections, this end, and one of my worst, because I love the pace where it just goes up to 11 in terms of him jumping around with the remote being chased by Spike from place to place. I mean, holy Shatner is a great gag.
Well, they'd obviously just seen Back to the Future 3 because they make all the same Western jokes in the Western sequence.
Wait.
He's even dressed like the man with no name, just like Michael J. Fox does, like Marty McFly
does.
To kind of
elucidate why I'm maybe a bit unbalanced in my appraisal. So there's a Star Trek Next Generation joke there. And to me, at 11, I was a massive like Star Trek Next Generation fan, but no one else that I knew my age was. It was just me and my granddad. Like, we used to watch all of them. And actually, we didn't have Sky or cable. My uncle did, and he used to tape it off Sky or something.
Yeah, it was
so,
Sky.
So to me, I was watching that at 11. I was like, oh my God, it isn't just me. Like, this is a thing that people like. Mm. And I'm from a small town, and I was a little bit nervous about my trajectory, to be honest. And when I saw that, I was like, I'm going to be fine. Other people.
And that's great. And I felt the same, you know, Star Trek Next Generation, brilliant reference. Amazing that it's in there. Western climax. It's like, well, it's sort of just a very broad stroke.
We've got the set. Mm. Let's get down there and do something there.
But she does a great job with the line, he's going to hit me with a train and blow me up. And her, Roy, is so good.
Roy gets to be Errol Flynn for a little bit. So now the fencing makes sense. So that's good. So we can tick that off. And then there is as much as I love this film, a very genuinely bad bit.
What?
Which the is
F.
The music video featuring Salt-N-Pepa, where John Ritter is dressed as Prince, and it goes on forever.
Spike is Cinderella.
Yeah.
It's just, what are Salt-N-Pepa doing in the film?
I was just thinking,
92, obviously they're one of the biggest bands in the world, but I didn't really, maybe if it was New Kids on the Block, I could have seen the connection to teenagers who were, this film seems to be aimed at, but it's the Salt-N-Pepa thing, and the fact that they play the whole song.
Yeah.
Well, it was the song for the movie. So if you watch the original video, it starts with them on TV and Stay Tuned is on the screen. So this was on the soundtrack for the film. So I think it's just a bit rich. If you are taking the piss out of TV for an entire movie and mocking TV shows and mocking adverts and all the rest of it, and then you put a promotion for the tied-in song to your movie in full and don't make it funny for the like three and a half minutes, it's just, you can't have your cake and eat it.
And it's weird. It's weird that Salt-N-Pepa have the controller.
Yeah.
The clicker. So they basically have these people's lives in their hands. Like, how did they get involved with this?
Quick question, sidebar. What do you call the remote control in your house?
The remote.
Do you? What do you call it?
The remote, I think,
What do you call it?
Like a twat now.
Well, Alan.
We call
what do you call it?
The buttons.
The buttons?
Yeah.
That's quite cute. I think you can call it whatever you want.
All right, thanks, Chris. Well, pass us the buttons.
I'm going to call it the buttons now.
Okay, but if you were in your house and Vicky said, can you pass me the buttons, would you know what she was talking about?
No.
Well, then it's not a good name. So I think the biggest problem is that this Salt-N-Pepa song, Start Me Up, is also Not premium salt and pepper.
No, not top five.
This is not push it. This is certainly not none of your business.
Let's talk about sex.
No. I tried to. The dancing is great, but I was like, this song is boring.
You gotta stir me up. I was like, I hated it as a kid, and I hated it this time.
So Spike is cancelled. The evil dog next door gets zapped. How did you feel about that?
I was actually fine with that because Rottweiler scared me when I watched this as a kid. I had been attacked by a dog only a few years earlier. My neighbour's dog attacked me. The only time in my life, age nine, where I've spontaneously wet myself. I genuinely believe that that my body was trying to create a moat to try and keep the dog out.
I think you were just frightened.
No, I like to think thinking.
This must have been from your stand-up because I've heard that moat line a couple of times.
I thought we'd moved past that, Alex. No, I really did.
All right, well, look, I've got a scar. There's a scar there. I've got a scar.
There's nothing there.
Bit me, yeah. That's why I've got a dog now that I can overpower.
I don't believe that, Simon. I don't believe that for a second. That dog could take you out with one bite. But speaking of injuries, Eugene Levy, who we barely mentioned, he's lost another appendage at this point. He's losing appendages, isn't he, in this film?
Yeah, because he gets exposed to the cold in Alaska, so his leg drops off.
I mean, he's got a weird subplot going on. He's a fantastic actor, but
He's great in it.
He's brilliant.
I remember being something quite bleak about him sort of losing limbs over the course of the movie. That's more strange to me in a family film than anything else.
Yeah. So then the family.
You didn't do Driving Over Miss Daisy.
Oh yeah, sorry.
You cannot. That was the funniest thing as a kid.
It's so brutal though. Yeah. It is really brutal. When he goes back over, it's outrageous.
But it's Geoffrey Jones's face. He's sort of mugging so much. He really pulls it off.
Yeah. Family reunited. And then Roy opens his fencing academy.
I don't remember this bit at all. It's very odd, isn't it?
Really weird. This is our happy finale. He's got a fencing school.
It is bananas because, again, script-wise, you've got your beginning, middle and end and you're like, okay, we're going to link the end to the beginning. What's the opposite of television? Fencing! Mm-hmm. It's not. But then in a weird way, this is what dates it in a way that is not necessarily negative. It's just very interesting. He says to one of his fencing students, you know, too much TV is bad for you. Do we still talk in those terms? Do we warn kids about watching too much TV? We basically say too much screen time is bad for you, but that's because of endless scrolling, not necessarily consuming TV.
Well, this film is very happy to steal from other films, and it should have been the Back to the Future ending. He should have been maybe an aspiring writer who gave up because all he did was watch TV rather than write his own stories, and then at the end he's gone back to writing.
Do him and Spike have a writing competition midway through? You need something active.
I see why it has to be something physical. Because that's the opposite of a couch potato.
Exactly. Fencing works. I know. I'm really thinking you're both being quite down on this fencing theme.
It's a strong theme. It's because it's bizarre. I think it's bizarre that it ends on a freeze frame of him in an empty fencing studio. Because that's what kids want to see.
When you say it like that, it does seem weird.
Small business that's definitely going to fail.
Yeah, I love that last shot. I think it's a really great shot. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's great.
Mm.
I will say at this point as a kid, no pun intended, I tuned out. I think I'm sort of gone. Once they're not channel hopping anymore, I'm like, whatever.
Why would you? Because you've got the full TV lineup coming up, aka jokes that weren't good enough for the movie.
The Fresh Prince of Darkness. That's good enough. Are you kidding?
The best joke in the whole show is Murder, She Likes.
Yeah.
David Dukes of Hazzard.
I had to look it up.
It's not good.
No. Nope.
I mean, I just know who he is. He's a baddie.
Yeah, he was a presidential candidate in the US who was written off because he was a huge supporter of the KKK.
Yeah, he was a grand wizard, I think. So,
Okay.
So, yeah, but it's just sticking puns up. Like,
Unmarried with Children's pretty good because it's so subtle.
But there's no visual. That's my memory. I remember the jokes, but I thought there was a still. I thought they filmed something.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, it feels quite lazy to me.
It's like, it's like they want to entertain us, but they didn't have the money to make a still. And also I think it's a shame we don't pay off Helen's job at this point. So Roy's got his fencing academy. There's a subplot bubbling away that he's trying to be supportive. He maybe feels a bit threatened of her ascendancy. And that is unresolved, which is a bit of a shame.
I mean, it's weird that this family was all quite disparate at the start and we don't see them together at the end. We see him having replaced watching TV with pursuing a career, but still not a family man.
Yeah, he's still not home.
Mm.
Yeah, and then that's it. So in doing the research, I found out that it was a massive bomb, which I didn't realise. I knew it hadn't like gone gangbusters because no one talks about it, but I didn't realise how bad it was. Mm. Although there is apparently, as of August last year, a TV series adaptation in the works, apparently. Mm. That's it. Do you want to do the bits?
I'd love to do the bits, and I know Chris is chomping at the bits.
Well, why don't you go first then, Chris? What's your best scene?
When he drives back over Miss Daisy.
Fair enough.
It's good. It's good. It's got to be the cartoon mice, 100%. I mean, I know it's the one that anyone would highlight from this, but it's just so well done. And Chuck Jones was a genius, and it's fantastic. So, yeah, Cartoon Mice by Chuck Jones.
Yeah, me too, just because it's just purely pleasure. It's just fun to watch, and it just activates all these different parts of your brain, especially now, like nostalgia as well. But when I was younger, I was like, I love cartoons and I love this, so that's brilliant.
I was obsessed with I used to rent Looney Tunes on VHS from the video shop, and I was obsessed with one anthology series, which it was kind of loads of separate cartoons, but it followed this overarching story where Yosemite Sam kept going to hell. Like, he kept ending up in hell and the devil kept sending him back to a different time. It was basically like Stay Tuned. He kept getting sent back to kill Bugs Bunny in different time periods. And in the end, he can't beat Bugs Bunny. So the devil goes, I'll give you one more chance. He goes, fuck it, I'm staying down here.
Should have made that movie. My MVW, though, I'll jump in because it's...
The football.
Chuck Jones.
Ah.
Chuck, no, what's it called? It's called Chuck Jones? Yeah. Going a bit mad there. Mm. So agreeing with you, but he's my MVW.
What about you?
Can't get through it fast enough, can he?
He's actually standing up.
I'm really hot as well, though. And I'm out of water.
So what's the next question you're asking me, Victor?
What's your most valuable whatever, Alex? Oof. And to take your time.
Do you know what? I didn't write anything down, so I'll just mull for a bit, if that's all right.
Show me your thinking, yeah.
You could have Eugene Levy.
No.
I like him.
No.
But he's better in other stuff.
Oh, this might take a while. The late, great John Ritter. I think, as I said earlier, he's got this brilliant energy to him, this incredible likability. So John Ritter is fantastic in this. Or the dish in the garden, which was a big deal to me as a kid. How does a satellite dish have so much menace? And yet that satellite dish does. So the dish in the garden.
John Ritter, because of the character change from, you know, where he starts to where he ends up, he does do he's brilliant, but he does a very good job of convincing you that he is going to step up, man up, become this hero. Yes, very well done. So him. Chris, one change.
Well, as I said, less puns, more actual jokes, but I feel like the shows that they go into should be used to sort of change the characters. I feel like they should be learning lessons in each of those situation, so there's a point to proceedings beyond the overarching one. Or play with that trope. You know, a lot of them are American sitcoms, and American sitcoms that era always had those awful sentimental life lessons. So have some fun with that, about what he learns or doesn't learn on those shows, rather than just giving us it's 30 something in prison.
Yep, you're right.
You like the start of Natural Born Killers, where she's in the family sitcom.
Exactly. Clever, do something smart with it. Mm.
You.
My change, fucking the Salt and Pepper fucking music video. It's just...
You push it.
It goes on so long. It's so awful. It's so self-congratulatory. It's a promotion for the tie-in song. Awful. I also think the line, you're the ugliest bitch in the whole of perdition, is an awful line.
Not nice.
Agreed.
Even as a
that
kid.
That was horrible,
It's just a bit nasty. And I think someone else was going to mention this, but I really would have liked to have seen the devil at some point.
Yes, I did say that.
Not front on. I just think him, like, sitting in an armchair from behind, you see his cloven hooves around the side of the chair, watching Hellvision.
He should have his hooves up, like, he's watching telly.
Don't set the devil up and then don't give us the devil.
A bank of monitors in front of him, just so you are sort of like, it's sort of weird to talk about him watching this and loving all these channels, but never actually
having crushing Spike at the end or something. Like, do something with the devil.
Yeah. Well, my change is related to that. I thought maybe get God involved. So I thought Pierce, the film school graduate, was a spy for the other side. So he's coming to, like, seed trouble.
Yeah.
And then maybe in the TV shows, there's a bit more of a push and pull between God and the devil for these people's souls.
Which happens in the ice hockey moment, because all the blue players have got, like, hope and purity written on their shirts as though they are heaven's team for playing hell's team.
Yeah, so just augment that a bit.
Mm, that's great.
That's it.
That's it from me.
Cool. Quiz. You fancy a quiz?
Yeah, of course.
TV theme tunes.
Are you playing them or just singing them?
Well, as we're talking TV, I was going to play you some theme tunes to see if you can identify them.
but the UK's strict copyright laws mean I can't do that. So my way around it is to type the lyrics into a robotic voice generator, have them speak the words, and then you've got to figure out what the show is.
Wow, okay.
So
don't most TV theme tunes not have words? Have not words? This is like a Steve Martin
joke. Well, what I've done is I've picked shows that did have words.
Right, okay. That's how you've got around that
and
problem.
To narrow it down a bit for you, they are all from around tea time in the 1980s and 90s. They're kids' shows.
Okay.
So, and I've given you a different robotic voice for each one. So this is Google UK English female. Are you ready?
Yeah.
He's the greatest. He's fantastic. Wherever there is danger, he'll be there.
Danger Mouse!
Correct!
Oh!
Point to Vicky.
Danger Mouse! Danger Mouse! I can't believe you got that. I was obsessed with Danger Mouse.
Yeah, me too.
This is Google UK English Mail.
Dance your cares away, worries for another day. Let the music play down in
Fraggle Rock.
Oh.
I used to have the 7-inch single of that song, and it was meant to be played at 45. We used to play it at 33 and smoke pot. And it sounds like this really cool old sort of jazz record. Dead cares away, worries for another day. It's amazing.
This is a robotic voice called Alex.
Lovely.
Up above the streets and houses.
Oh, Poddington Peas.
Pigeon Street.
No.
Up above
Rainbow.
The streets.
Yes.
Fuck you.
Wow. 2-1 to Alex. This is a long one now, so jump in if you get it. This robotic voice is called Victoria.
Oh, okay.
Stand back, Superman, Iceman, Spider-Man, Batman and Robin too. Don't wanna cause a ruckus with the Abarasius. But I've got a match for you. She makes them look like a bunch of fairies.
Gem!
She's got more bottle than United Dairies. Hang about. Look out. For.
Supergirl.
So close.
Supergran.
Yeah!
Oh! No!
lyrics and sung by Billy Connolly. Fact fans. Okay, this is Fiona, robot voice.
In the heart of Transylvania, in the vampire hall of
Tales.
Yeah,
Count Dracula.
There's not a vampire senior then.
Yeah! This is driving me mad!
Last one.
You do have to understand, I spend a lot of time on YouTube watching old theme tunes to cartoons from the 80s.
I don't want
to
hear it!
This is Moira. I think she's an Irish robot.
Dashing and daring, courageous and caring,
Chip and Dale.
Faithful and friendly,
the
with stories
Dog
to share. All through the forest, they sing out in chorus, marching along as their song fills the air.
Gummy bears, yes. Bouncing here and there and everywhere. High adventure that's beyond compare. They are the gummy bears.
Oh, no. Probably
they
have to
are
pay.
The gummy bears. Yes.
Probably have to pay some royalties now.
Magic
but.
And mystery is part of their history, along with the secret of gummy berry juice.
I think we all win because of that. That's nice.
That was a 5-1 win to Alex.
I need to leave the house more. I do. They've got compilations of all of them.
The tiebreaker was just going to be me saying two words.
Go on.
Underground, overground.
Wombling free. The wombles of Wimbledon.
You've already got that one as well.
Making good use of the things that we find. The things that the cats and the dogs leave behind. That was a joke in primary school. Right then. Lovely fun. Great quiz this week, Chris. Love that quiz, Chris. Chris, quiz. Chris. Great quiz. Right then. Let's look ahead, not to Thursday, where we're going to be talking the Cable Guy, but indeed to next week, which it's fallen to Chris to palate cleanse the show from these movies that he is not a fan of this week. Not a fan.
No spoilers. This isn't actually my pick this week. Instead, I've handed over the reins to one of my favourite podcasts, The Best Bits, which is a show where screenwriters Will Collins and Kevin Lehane pick and pitch their favourite film scenes from randomly selected themes like best fight scene, best musical scene, best sex scene. And they get a bit more specific sometimes. I really like the episode where they had best Tom Cruise running scene.
Yeah, great.
Everybody runs.
So they...
apart from in this movie.
They've picked the films for next week. And the clue is, don't judge a bot by its cover. Don't judge a bot by its cover.
Love it.
They also let us pick a theme for one of their shows, so head over to The Best Bits to find out what. While Will and Kevin will be popping up at the end of our show on Thursday to reveal the movies and say why they've picked them.
That's great. So you should give the best bits a listen as well.
It's, definitely. So good.
It's absolutely brilliant. Really love that show. Thank you, guys. Thank you for that clue. We'll be hearing from you on Thursday when we'll also be talking about the Cable Guy. That's us done for today. In the meantime, please, if you haven't done already, subscribe to us, rate and indeed review us if you do have the time. It's a great help. And check on us on Twitter and Instagram where we are at Clash Pod. The Cable Guy is Thursday.
Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The secret to visibly firmer, summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dull, dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Rich yet never greasy, Andaria Algae Body Oil is formulated with sustainably sourced seaweed to help replenish the skin's moisture barrier and 7 nourishing active botanical oils for results you can see and feel all over. The best part? Its signature scent. A blend of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. This all-natural scent is unforgettable. Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.